Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of various ways, thanks to the guys at Between Rounds Radio, TG DeSantis and a crew. Appreciate it. Much love. You are listening to this on SoundCloud. You are listening to this on Spotify. You are listening to this on my direct blog, which is lrdgaul.podbean.com, or you are listening to this on the iTunes or on iTunes by entering Warman Kickfighting Show into the iTunes search engine. So I'm going to go ahead and jump into it. The coronavirus, of course, is the big story, and I talked about it at length last time with all the shows being canceled. But if there's one show that could give a damn about the coronavirus, it is the K1 K-Festa event that's going down in about 12 hours from now. You know, so I wanted to get this show in because I know a lot of people are, you know, in quarantine for where in the area that they're at. So I know that you are in places where you're not able to get out and do as much. So I wanted to give you guys some podcast love to get through it. I'm going to do a couple of series to get us through the next week. If you're wondering if these cancellations of shows means that I am not going to be able to keep bringing you high-level action, like if I'm going to stop doing my podcast, I will comfort you right now by telling you there is way too much in the kickboxing world for me to keep talking about because it's my game. The next show I'm going to do, which I'm probably going to send out on Wednesday or Thursday, is going to be the scariest Muay Thai fighters, or scariest kickboxers, I'll say, of the last 25, 30 years. So I'm always going to have different series and different things that I can do. But just so you know, I'm going to keep doing my kickboxing podcast because it won't stop and it can't stop. So I'm going to go ahead, go right into the K1 card, and there's a lot of good stuff, a lot of fights that have fallen through thanks to the various injuries and most importantly, coronavirus travel restrictions. I don't think that K1 was particularly ready for that, but they've been able to on the fly make some adjustments and get some changes in. Now it's unfortunate, but it very much is part of this sport that cards change, you know. But this is one where the big question that's still being asked by everybody is, should we be doing this, you know? And by we, I mean K1. Should they still be having this card? I mean, if this were Korea, I guess people would feel different about it because South Korea seems like they are on the other side of this. They seem like they've put in strict restrictions. They've done good health care. They've done their tests, they've done their screening, now they've got their count under control, and it seems like they are going back to regular life there. So maybe if the card was moved there, people would feel differently. But Japan still has some issues, you know, they're still working through some things, and everybody's different. You know, I can't make an argument for why or why they shouldn't do it. You know, clearly public safety and the way the experts have explained, you know, the guys who put their lives into, you know, this type of research, they would much rather people not do big events at this period of time. But I am not there in Japan. I do not know the climate of what's going on. I'm only going off reports. If they feel it's, you know, safer or healthier right now to do the show, like it's okay to move on to doing the show, I can understand that. But as they haven't really canceled too much, it just made me wonder. So we'll go ahead and go into some of the changes. First of all, Adam Barraro is the Moroccan guy who was supposed to come in and fight Takuru. I actually got to watch a couple of his fights in preparation for it. If it had have been Adam, it would have been a pretty entertaining fight. Adam is not what one would call a technical wizard. Like, he doesn't have the smoothest of offensive, you know, techniques. Like, his punching combos can be wide and wild, but he's got the aggression, so he would put on a fun fight. He fought in this weird organization where they had, like, slams and throws, not like shootboxing, but they counted. Like, literally, you could push a guy on the ground, and they didn't see it as against the rules or illegal. It was just a weird rule set. But I watched a lot of his fights, and I go, man, I can see why this guy was picked. He would have put on a good, entertaining fight against a really, you know, high-level, you know, Lord of War, one of the best kickboxers walking the planet. It would have been fun to see that one. Another person that dropped, Kim Falk dropped. She was supposed to, what was that? I'm trying to remember where that was. Asahisa Tao, I believe, is a replacement there. I'll go into that part full. But that's a drop. And then the last drop was Nicholas Larson. That drop was, you know, replaced by Avatar, Tor, Morrissey. So those are the three big drops to the card off the top of my head. Adam, of course, is the big one because he was in the main event. But outside of that, you know, they scrapped together an all right card. The card was not great in the beginning. Let's just go ahead and say that. You know, some of the matches that people wanted to see were not available for this one. So this was not what I would call the most high level of matches. Just me personally, that's my personal opinion on it. I did not think that this K-Festa compared to the ones previously. But we'll go ahead and go rocking through the card. I'll give you what I think is going to happen tonight. Kimura Minoru, and shout out to Shunsuke, who's always doing great highlights. He did a highlight on Minoru. He just got it. Like last year, he won six fights, all KOs. He is the heavy, you know, the KO hitter right now in the Japanese fight scene. Moving up to 70 kgs. So I'm wondering how that's going to go, because I thought that he was probably at his best at 65. You know, even he's got his best wins there. You know, he's got some upsets, and, you know, he's so strong for the weight class. Not the best defensive guy in the world. He just depends on his strength to get him through things. But he has been on a streak, and he's been banging people out left and right. So shout out to Minoru. He goes against Kato here. Kato talented. I think this fight was set up in hopes of Minoru moving forward. Not sure he's going to win the whole thing, but going to go ahead and see how he goes against Kato. That 70 kg matchup, I've got Minoru moving forward. Next one, Edgar Lopez goes against Katsuya Jinbo. Jinbo's all right. This is kind of a toss-up for me. I'm going to go with Lopez or Lopes. I think he is with Larson not being in it, him and Paulus are the guys who have the best opportunity to move forward. In my personal opinion, they are the guys who I think most have a chance to advance in this round. So we'll see what happens. But I like Lopez winning that one. Yoshihiro Kido against Milan Paulus. Man, I want to go Paulus. I really do. But I'm actually going to go Kido. I think, you know, Kido's old school. He was part of the old K1 Max. In fact, I should say this. He never left K1 Max. Whatever version of it, he always seemed like he was on the card, even on the Greece tournament card. So shout out to him. Kido doing great. You know, I think Kido, Yoshihiro Kido, who is the all-comedy guy for K1, for the kickboxing world with his promos and his, you know, his pre-entrance videos, he's just hilarious. I think he wins this one. And then we got Harumi Wajami going against Avatar, Tor, Morsri. Morsri, of course, that late replacement. Not impossible for him to win, but I like Wajima, who has already been preparing for the bout. I would have picked Larson to move on had it not been for, if he had been able to still do the tournament. So, we move on. Next fight we have on the card is Satoru Naraya. Goes against Yudaka. This fight will give me a little bit more about both. I've seen both fight before. Not huge one way or the other right now. Would like to see this one play out. But that card will follow the tournament. Then you have Hideki Yamazaki against Hikaru Tsushima. I definitely like Yamazaki. Yamazaki's got some big wins. He's got some really cool KOs. Has a victory over Masaki Nori. You guys know how I feel about my son. So, like, he's a good fighter. Good fighter. Entertaining. He's going to bring the fight. I really want to see him go against elite opposition, more international opposition moving forward. So hopefully he can get a stoppage victory and move forward. Yuta Kubo goes against Jordan Piquet. Jordan Piquet, I always joke on this show, is of the moment he loses in Crush, they will never use him again. He is so big and strong for the weight class that it doesn't matter that you hit him. Like, he is not a defensive wizard. He's right there to be hit. If you throw hard shots, you're going to hit him with hard shots. But he's just a machine. He's so strong. And, you know, the one time, you know, he did lose, it was against, you know, it was at 70 kgs against a much more accomplished kickboxer at that weight class. So that was at 70 kgs. He was strong. So when he went through that K1 Max tournament, he had a good run. But then he went down in weight. So now you're like, okay, what's going to come from this guy next? Now that he is bigger, he was already big and strong and fought hard when he was 70 kgs. Now he didn't cut a couple pounds. Who's going to stop him? The answer so far is no one. And there's been good moments. Saki Nori had some really good moments against him. You know, Ren Hiromoto has good moments against him, but he's just so strong for the weight class. Yudakubo in the early 2000s, you guys heard me talk about him in the podcast last time, he really was the guy in this division. He was an amazing, amazing fighter, had good he's just slick, you know. He was able to score the right time, tap the right time. Do not rule out him getting a victory here. I know a lot of people have already passed him. They don't think that Kubo's got, you know, what it takes. PK's too, you know, Jeremy Picard is too strong. But do not rule out Kubo's opportunity to win this one. He could put together the right kind of performance, get some sneaky shots, keeps it close. You know how those scorecards are in Japan. Keep it close. Maybe you get to an extra round. Maybe you score four shots to his four shots and you win because you're Japanese. I think Yudakubo has a good chance to win tonight. Not picking him, though. Jordan Piquet is just too big, too strong. I have him winning the, I believe it is their 67.5 kg title. I'm not sure how they're doing that, but it's around there. Intermission follows there. Then we got Keita Ozawa against Josiah Sor Deshapan. Keita Ozawa is Ozawa out? Scratch that. I think Ozawa might be out. But I just go ahead and say if this fight does go forward and I'm wrong, I think that Ozawa has the tools to beat Josiah. They are selective about the ties that they pick. And Josiah is good enough to win this fight, but I think Ozawa is the favorite here. Musashi Kimura gets a fight with Akihiro Kaneko. Kimura, solid talent. Kaneko, also solid. I think this is a good place. I like this where this fight is placed in the card because it's a good action fight right in the middle of the card. I'm curious to see how this one goes. I don't have a pick one way or the other. I'm leaning Kimura, but we'll see. I've been impressed by Kaneko as well. Yuta Murakoshi is going out there to go against Leona Pettis. Pettis, of course, is the guy who everybody wants to see fight Takuro. He is a phenomenal, phenomenal talent. And he's strong for the division, and he's just when they put it together, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. But he's a talent, and hopefully Pettis will put on a good show, win by stoppage, and encourage them to do something in the summer with him and the Lord of War. After that, we go on to Masan Masaki Nori to go against David Mejia. David Mejia is a talent. He's not a Masaki Nori level talent. Nori is so good, so patient. Low kick game on point, step knees on point, and his boxing has just always been deceivingly good. It's always been solid for setting up the low kicks, but when he commits to the hands, in particular when he commits to the rip to the body, he is a phenom. So I think Masaki Nori, David will be competitive, but he will be stopped by Masaki Nori. Then we've got the next round of the tournament. I'm going to go ahead and say Kimura Minoru is going to move on against, he'll beat Edgar Lopez. And then on the other side, I've got Keto beating Ujima, leading to a Minoru versus Keto final. Rikia Ampo goes against Fukashi. Ampo, of course, doing great work, moving into his prime, really having a lot of success, beating people left and right. Very, very impressed. I'm excited to see more of him moving forward, but he's doing big things at a good time in his career. Kenta Hayashi against Tai Asahisa. I mentioned that one before. Asahisa, I believe, is the replacement in that one. I like Kenta winning that because Kenta's already been, you know, in shape and prepared to compete. Kana goes against Gloria Priatore. I was wondering about this fight because of Gloria, to the best of my knowledge, is Italian. So maybe she got there early. Who knows? I don't know. But, like, she will be there and... I think I've seen Gloria fight, if I remember correctly. I want to say she fought in the, just going off the top of my head here, she fought on Bellator Kickboxing 2, if I remember correctly, and she lost to Denise Akilholz. I'm pretty sure that's who she fought. But anyways, small for the weight class. Her and Kana should put on a good fight, but Kana should win. Kana's got more pop. Kana has more things that are good for the K1 style, whereas Gloria can play the game, got good kicks, got, you know, a weird movement, but, you know, she's had success offensively. But against elite competition, it has not showed up. I like Kana winning that one clear. Yoshiki Takai, of course, in his prime, doing good stuff. He's going against Dansine Ayathai Fight Gym. I'm going to go Takai. Again, we're talking I felt like this card is almost set up for their stars to have showcase wins, as opposed to really tough, you know, opposition to make us see why they are better than other people. So you even see it in the tournament. You have a 70kg tournament for your champion, and five of the guys are from Japan in an 8-man tournament, you know, so you could see that. But anyways, I really think that Takai should win. Takai should win. Don't think that he'll win by stoppage, but I do think that he will win for sure. Cena Kuramane is going against Ryu Ataka. Cena's very good. Very good. Based in Japan. Has a good skill set. Always talks about how he wants to go against, you know, some of the elite guys and you know, at the light heavyweight division around the world. He is, they're kind of a tweener division as far as how the K1s does it. He's bigger than where the glory middleweights fight, but smaller than where the light heavyweights. There's a lot of room in there. So I think that he will win clear, stoppage, in fact. Cena's very talented. Curious to see what that one looks like. And then we finish the card with Takuru as he goes against Petchdam. And Petchdam is taking this fight on 4 days' notice. I'm assuming he's just close in the weight class. Takuru been, you know, training, does his, you know, America tour as always. He's just a beast. Like, he's just a strong, heavy hitter who doesn't care about getting hit. Who's just, I mean, he's just off arms. All of his cards, somebody's got to get hurt. This guy's moving forward. He's been dropped and got up and won by KO. He's just one of the all-action stars in the kickboxing world. I expect another dominant win by him. So shout out to Takuru. Now that I have finished that K1 card, which again, it's got a lot of controversy around it, whether or not they should be having it. It has a lot of, you know, card changes, making you wonder about the value of the card. People wondered about the value of the card going into it. But it still should be a good show. We love kickboxing. I'll be excited to watch it no matter what. And you know, hopefully Pettis and Nori and all those guys will come through and put on a good show. And it would be a lot of fun if Kido is able to win this tournament outright. Because Kido is my favorite to win it. And I think Minoru Kimura, if he wins, that one's also an awesome win. Like those two names winning are good for the tournament. In particular, if it's Minoru, because he's got such that urban appeal, and he's an interesting dude. He's the kind of guy that you want to be the star of your organization. So we'll see how he does at 70kgs. Should be a fun tournament. Should be a good card in terms of action. But in terms of high-level back and forth, probably not what we're looking, or not what we've seen before in the past. But should be a lot of fun, and I'm excited to see how that one goes. Speaking of all-action entertaining fighters, I missed this when it happened, and I told myself I've got to go back and bring it up because it's very important. So, Rod Tang, one of the great action stars in kickboxing world today, he is a phenomenal fighter. Like, he is just fun. But he runs into and loses to the crafty, skilled Konar PK's Sensei Muay Thai Gym. This happened on the 27th last month. But it made me ask the question. The question is, will he always struggle with people who know how to play the game? Because in my, you know, of my favorite Thai fighters all over the, you know, the generations, I've always loved it if they were a little bit different. I love the technical guys, the guys who can play the game. You know, I've always loved the Sam A's and the people who can play, you know, on that lead foot, you know what I'm saying? Like clinch guys, you know, like there's been some really, really good ones throughout the years. You know, Petch Bunchu, you know, of course, Sanchai plays the game extremely high level. There are a lot of names throughout history of people who are very good with that style. But I've always enjoyed if someone who's a little bit more reckless is able to emerge to the top. It's hard to do. It's hard to do. The guys are so good and they're so patient and they know how to cut you off. And there's really no surprise. You're going to go cross a low kick against a tie. You think they ain't seen that? If you've been doing the sport since you were 8 years old, they really do see the best of the best come at them on a regular basis. So for me, whenever I see someone like a Pornsenai type where they have just aggression and they come out with a combo style, I'm hoping that they can get to the elite. You know what I'm saying? I'm hoping that they can beat a Pecorn. You know what I'm saying? I like to see it done because it doesn't get done that often. So when you get a guy like Rod Tang, who is now, you know, champ, if you will, and one championship, and he's still doing good stuff, and he's not afraid of nobody, and he's bringing a war to everybody breathing. I'm a huge fan of what he does and the success that he has as a fighter. With that said, you know what I'm saying? I think that when he goes to the stadiums, there are still people who have the game down, and they have his number. Now, he'd still been winning in both. You know, he beat Saxon. That's a good stadium win there. Jodlopek kind of fights a style a little bit, you know, easier for him to get a hold of because they're both kind of killing each other or whatever. But his one championship run has a lot of wins, but he's still fighting in the Rogers Stadium, Rajaran Stadium. He is still going against high-level opposition, and it's going to be tough for him to win them all, and no one wins them all, you know. So I don't want to jump on him too much for this win. But it has to be asked, and the way that you ask it for everybody else, do people who play the game in Thailand, are they better than him, and he's got more recognition because of what he does in kickboxing and one championship? Just a fun question to ask. But with that said, Konar gets the victory, and Konar's tough, man. Like, this is, you're talking about one of the better guys in the stadium game right now, and he himself is, you know, he had a fantastic 2018 where he was killing it, beat Sexton a lot of times. He's just skilled, and those guys are really good, and they're fighting at a high level, but you're going to see losses all over the place. It's just kind of how this game is. When you fight someone that elite opposition that much, it's going to come up. So, going to go ahead and wrap the show up today. I'm going to go a little bit shorter for you guys because I'm going to spend this last to talk about the news that Albert Krauss has retired from kickboxing. I want to talk about his legacy, what makes him important, and why he is a name that if there was a kickboxing Hall of Fame, he'd be in it. First things first, when you talk about Albert Krauss's resume, when you talk about it, it first starts off with the sentence, first ever K1 Max Grand Prix champion. Very, very important. The reason why it's important is not simply that Krauss won, but I've mentioned before, Masaki Satake is the reason why there's a K1 heavyweight division. They had been doing some events. He was already a high-level karate guy. He's got some big-time wins. You know, Don Nielsen was one of his wins. Peter Olo was one of his wins. You know, those are stoppage wins early. But around that period of time, and I want to say it's the Don Nielsen fight. Could be wrong there, but I'm pretty sure it was him. That's where the idea of this kickboxing thing started to resonate. This idea of, well, maybe we could do something with kickboxing. And actually, let me change that. I believe it was Ahmad Muhammad, whose name was might have been different at the time. But I think that was the first big one that made K1 say, hey, let's get all the best heavyweights in the world to see what we could do. You know what I'm saying? And that's where the King of Kings, Champions of Champions, that's where the value of the K1 title began. He had a big win over Ahmad Muhammad, first round KO. And then that's when they started to say, hey, maybe Masaki Satake could prove to be the best in the world. Let's bring the best kickboxers in the world here for a tournament. And of course, you guys, you know, Bronco Sikatik won the first one. And, you know, Ernesto Hughes, Peter Arts, all those guys. Arts was favored to win it. But that's where this thing began. In that way, Masato was the guy in the Japanese, you know, kickboxing world who they were thinking, let's make a division for this guy. Masato was so popular. Girls loved him. Had that look. Had that fight style. He was the guy that the moment you saw him, you know, compete, you knew you had something special. So because of Masato, he got fights on the big K1 heavyweight cards. And at that period of time, they were like, can we do something with this guy's division? They went ahead and they did it. First ever K1 Max. Max, which stands for Middleweight Artistic Extreme. Isn't that crazy? Most people don't know that. But that's what it stands for. But that started, and they put together their first tournament in 2002. The goal, and the way that Masaki Satake was supposed to have success, the goal was for a Japanese champion to emerge. But when Masaki did it, I believe he was the only Japanese fighter in the field. Masato did it. There were two Japanese fighters in the field. There was him, and there's Korimaki. I'm just drawing a blank. I was watching TV at the same time. My apologies. But Kohei or Kohiramaki, those were the guys where, you know, Masato and Kohiramaki, those were the guys who, when this first started, they were the Japanese guys who were really good. And Kori Yamaki was legit. He stopped Masato. So they put on a tournament with just Japanese fighters. And then from there, they moved on to doing heavy cards. Sorry, I'm not sure if you guys noticed that, but there was something that was happening with my computer, so I had to have a quick break. I'll get right back into what I was talking about with Albert Krauss. So basically, we're starting this K1 Max thing, and Masato is the favorite. They also have Kohei Yamaki, who's also another guy in the tournament field, and it's set up for it to be a strong field, and it was a strong field. It had really, really good kickboxers in the field, and the winner of that tournament was to be the first ever K1 Max champion. I won't say that he upset it, like in terms of it was just out of the question that we were going to have someone the level of, you know, Albert Krauss not have a chance. Like, he upset it, but he definitely went against what they were hoping the script would be. So Albert Krauss goes out there, gets the victory. He first starts off by beating Dwayne Ludwig in the, let me back that up. His first round victory of that tournament was over Shane Chapman. Second round, he meets Masato, and then he beats Kohichit in the final to win the first ever championship. Here's the important part about that. This is very, very important. After this, him and Masato fight again, and they fight to a draw. And then he fights Mike Zambides, the guy who was considered the best kickboxer in the world, not in Max. Mike then comes in and stops him. So in that period of time, you're like, all right, he had all this momentum, and then he gets stopped. Not to mention, before the tournament, he lost to Kamel El-Omrani. And Kamel El-Omrani, of course, was the big star for Super League in the very beginning. The importance of Krauss is that after this, he then fought in Heaven or Hell. He fought in Super League against Masashi Konote. He kept fighting Roman Alogish, another person he fought in Super League. He was campaigning in two big companies at the time. Now, Max clearly the biggest company, but he kept campaigning outside of it. What that meant was it gave the world the first glimpse of how good the K1 Max champion really was. Masato was very good, but Masato fought outside of Japan maybe 2-3 times. Like, most of his whole career is in front of his home base. He didn't go into other people's homes. So, like, you guys hear me talk about with Iman Barlow all the time. One of the things that makes Iman Barlow's record so special is that if you look at it, it's fought Swedish fighter fought Swedish fighter in Sweden, fought, you know, Belgian fighter in Belgium, fought Dutch fighter in Holland, fought German fighter in Germany. She keeps putting herself out there as the A-side talent, but also the away team in terms of fighting, you know, these elite competitions. So in that way, Krauss was the first. Bukau clearly took it to the highest level. Bukau can, you know, he took it from that level of I'm K1 champion. He went out there and he beat a lot of the best guys. That was right when the WNC was really starting out to pick up. And Jamhad was the champion of it, and he had challenged Bukau. Bukau goes out there and stops him. So, like, he was beating the best guys in the world and stopping them on a regular basis. So you really have to give him his due for that. But before he had done it, before he'd won the champion 2 years later, Krauss was one of the guys who was campaigning in both. So when you look at the history and his history in kickboxing, first sentence is K1 World Max Champion. Second sentence is he continued to fight elite guys from elite organizations throughout the world. And again, his run was up and down. He had the Andy Sauer victory and the Dwayne Ludwig victory, both stoppages. And of course, he loses to Masato by stoppage. Still a great historic, you know, championship run. Getting the most knockdowns and the most KOs early in his career. Gets the loss to Masato, but no shame there. Goes out there, continues to get the wins that I talked about, continues to have good runs. Never again would he return to a final after that. He was never in the K1 Max final after the loss to Masato. But he continued to have good fights, good showing. First one to beat Bukau on the Max roster. Very, very important. That's got to go on his resume as well. Ended up losing to Masato later in his career. So, like, there's nothing wrong with that. So he had win, draw, you know, and then he had the loss. Masato, clearly history will remember him as the better kickboxer of the two, but he was still exceptional talent. We had these are all still the early times. His fight with Yoshihiro Sato is one of the best kickboxing matches you're ever going to see. 2007 Yoshihiro Sato. Go ahead and look at that fight with him and Mike Zambides. And then one of my favorite performances, you know, this is past his prime. It should be noted, Georgia Petrosian, for his excellence, he came when everybody had already been fighting in mats for like 7-8 years. He kind of caught them on the back end as opposed to catching them on the young end. And unfortunately for Petrosian, there wasn't another group of young guys to kind of come in and be that opposition for him. But he caught a lot of those guys late. But late in Krause's career, he had this run where he beats Ali Gunyar, Mike Zambides, Yoshihiro Kido. So he avenged the Zambides loss. He had the Bacow win that he should not have had in Showtime 2008. Definitely a one-sided victory for Bacow as far as the scoring looked. But they gave it to Krause, the hometown guy. I got an asterisk on that one. But other than that, Warren Stevelman, Suhi Lee, this is all when he's going into his, you know, 30s, later part of his career, you know, like he's heading into that. And then, of course, the Yuichiro Nagashima fight, very, very important, are very, very famous just because of the back and forth over Nagashima dressing up as an anime character. And he says, if you dress up as a girl, either you're gay or there's something wrong with you. I remember there was a little bit of times are different now. That was in 2009. He said that today. They had brought the torches to his house. But, like, it's just a different era. So, also a Koza Takada victory. All this is kind of what I thought was winding down the end of his career. And though he lost to Georgia Petrosian, and I apologize, he did get back to one more K1 Max final. Though he lost to George Petrosian in 2000 and, what was that, 10? He fought him extremely well. He fought him very, very tough. Very, very tough. To the point where I was like, Krause won that one. Like, I thought that there was a chance that Krause would have gotten some of the scorecards. He'd won the crowd. He did extremely well. You know, I could see people feeling like he'd pulled off that upset. Both him and Mike Zambides had some really good tough fights with Petrosian that time will forget because Petrosian got his hand raised. But this is all towards what I thought was the end of his career around the 2000-2011. This guy continued to fight, and he didn't stop until right now. 2020, that's how long he went. I think he kept looking for oppositions. His last fight was 2018, and I think he was still down to fight if the paycheck was right. He'd already been coaching. There's this great pick when, because he had his own music. He had the Krause's in the House song, and he goes out there with his son, and his son's like punching and moving in front of him, and now his son is grown, and is a fighter. You know what I'm saying? And unfortunately for him, he was older in his career by the time the glory opportunities came around. He had the Warren Stevelman's win, but then after that, he had several losses. Andy Risty, Kai Hollenbach, Preacher, and they were stoppage losses in some of those cases. So he had a great run, and he was able to extend it for a long period of time. And I always wondered when he was going to stop, because one time I heard his coaches say that Krause is one of the few people who could still be fighting at the highest level at this period of time. At that period of time, I did not think he should be fighting guys at the highest level. I think he should have been fighting guys that were a little bit older. Like, that's how I just personally felt. But he had a great run. He's got a win over pretty much every great fighter of his generation, you know. Win and a loss, no problem with that, you know. He's got a Yoshihiro Sato win, got a Yoshihiro Sato loss. But he had such a great run. He is an all-time great. He's not in the Mount Rushmore, not in the top four all-time of his division. But if there's a Hall of Fame, he's in it. Albert Krause was a truly special guy. I remember the first time a video emerged and he spoke English. And I was like, I knew he could do it, but it was my first time hearing him speak English. And I remember thinking, this guy, if this K1 were to make its way over to America, he would have been a great opportunity as a crossover star because he could just speak so clearly and so calmly. But, you know, Dutch is his original language. So shout out to him. Shout out to his career. All the big wins. I mentioned Bacow, Kido, Zambides, Koza Takada. He was older, but still. Just Virgil Calicuta fight. That was Virgil's debut. Really, really fun fight. That was Virgil's second fight. Virgil's debut was against Yoshihiro Sato. But, like, he had some really good. The Peter Crick win, I was a big fan of that. he had a great career. Go ahead, sit down, go through his Wikipedia. He had a great career. So when you look back at it, you look back at, you know, his Max career, and you look back at what he did in, you know, It's Showtime, and you look back what he did in Super League, he has a world-class all-time resume. And if there's a Hall of Fame, he needs to be in it. So shout out to one of the all-time great kickboxers who did this with more of a boxing style, more of a boxing style. He probably punched 75% of the time and kicked 25%. And I would say in some fights, it was even less. But he's got, you know, there's Jianwei Parwin in there. Like, there's just, he just had a great career. He figured out the kickboxing style that he wanted to compete with. And he really put out a great performance. Like, just a high-level guy. High-level person. You've never heard about Albert Krauss getting into some street fight afterwards or gang affiliations. Or, you just didn't hear that stuff. Only thing that you heard whenever it came to Albert Krauss is he fought to the best of his abilities and he went home. You know what I'm saying? Like, he just didn't have the extra attached to him. Now, some people say that hurts your view of a fighter. But, man, for me, Krauss has a great Hall of Fame run. Now, if you see your phone ring and it says one championship on there, don't answer it. Because you want to retire. You want to go, you had a great run, it's time to walk out of this game. And they will for sure call you up and offer you some money to go out there and compete still. And you'll start thinking, you know, maybe I've got one more run in you. That's how people stay from being retired. Like, that, those are the things that come into play. If you want to be retired and stay retired, you got to answer your phone a lot less. For now on, your wife answers the phone. Your wife or your kids answers the phone. That's the only way you can be safe. I want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast. I hope this gives you something to do as we all enjoy our, you know, corona-induced quarantines. Still work out. Scary thing. If you guys get opportunities, get your runs in. You know what I'm saying? Like, still figure out some in-home workout. But don't just allow yourself to get fat for 2 weeks. God bless everybody. Thanks for listening to the podcast. And I look forward to our next episode where I talk about the scariest fighters in kickboxing. Meaning, when this person was standing across from you, you're like, all right, what do? You know what I'm saying? Or how do I face it? There's going to be some names you know and some names that you don't know. But in the end, when you guys do the research on that, you're going to say, all right, I see why you picked this guy. God bless everybody. Peace.